Well, good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining the Melbourne City Council meeting number 7. It's Tuesday, the 29th of June, 2021, and we are kicking off at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public. Thank you for joining us for tonight's meeting. The City of Melbourne respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we are gathered, the Bunurong Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and recognise their elders past, present and emerging. We are committed to our reconciliation journey and believe that every effort we make to strengthen relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people strengthens our community, our city and our state. As part of our efforts to contain COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, physical attendance by members of the public at council and committee meetings is limited until further notice. During the period 1 May 2020 to 26 April 2022, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to physically attend meetings. We can satisfy the public attendance test by virtue of live streaming. This meeting is being streamed live and the audio and video recording will be published on the council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be on our website as soon as practicable. Could we please check that all mobile phones have been turned to off or silent for the duration of the meeting? Thank you. The agenda this evening comprises two reports from the Submissions Section 223 Committee, 12 reports from management, two of which are confidential. We have an apology from Councillor Chang, and I'm just checking to see if there are any other apologies. No, we're good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kevin. We have, moving to number two on our agenda, if any councillor has either a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020 in relation to a matter to be considered this evening, please state the nature and type of your interest prior to consideration of the item. Much appreciated. Councillors, item three is confirmation of minutes of previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting open minutes of council meeting number 6 held on Tuesday, the 25th of May 2021. Councillor Griffiths, thank you for kicking us off this evening, and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Lelou, thank you. All those in favour, can you please raise your hands? It's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Councillors, thank you. Are there any items arising from those minutes that councillors would like to discuss at this time? None? Thank you. The following submission has been received in accordance with the council's governance rules in relation to agenda item 6.2, Economic Development Strategy to 2031, Melbourne's Thriving Economic Future. We've had an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. Thanks, Chris. Councillors, does anybody wish to discuss the confidential status of the items noted on our agenda as confidential? No, thank you very much. There are two reports from Submissions Committee for consideration in the open session this evening. The first one is the proposed discontinuance and sale of PL5208 in North Melbourne. Councillors, any conflict? No. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? Thank you. Then I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Lelou, Councillor Lelou, yeah. And a councillor to second the motion. Thanks, Councillor Reece, Deputy Lord Mayor. Over to you, Councillor Lelou.
Nothing really to add, what is actually said on the screen at the moment, and nothing too much to add.
Thank you, Councillor Lou. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I will note that, of course, this proposed discontinuance and sale does comply with the road discontinuance and sale policy, which has been approved by Council in May 2017. So ratepayers and others can be assured that there's been absolute inscrutable process followed here, confident and pleased to be able to support this recommendation.
Thank you. Any other speakers to this motion? Then all those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. We declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. We're on to agenda item 5.2, which is proposed discontinuance of parts of Linlithgow Avenue, Melbourne, in order to protect public open space. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. Then I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Lulu, thanks, and a councillor to second the motion. Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Over to you, Councillor Lulu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thanks to the Section 223 Committee for the submission. I should learn a lot more about that particular area in this area, and I had to reread it a couple of many times. But to reinforce, it's not actually discontinuing the road part of the avenue, but rather the two highlighted rocky fountains from part of that. And as the Deputy Lord Mayor said in the previous motion, all avenues and process been followed.
Thank you, Councillor Lowe. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. And just to further emphasise the point, we did receive some correspondence which suggested that some people were of a view that this what we're considering this evening would have an impact on traffic flows through Linlithgow Avenue and surrounds. But in fact, what this actually does is have no impact on the adjoining roads. The land in question, as shown clearly in the diagrams, is already parkland. And so, if anything, the removal of the road status gives greater protection to the parkland, but will have no impact on the existing road.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. I am looking to see if there are any other speakers to this motion. Then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. Masks on and off, it's tough. This concludes reports from the Submissions Committee to be considered in open session this evening. It brings us to reports from management we're going to move on to agenda item 6.1, but I am going to divert for a moment because I did miss something very important at the start of the meeting, and we've all been working at a pace this afternoon, and I hope that it's okay for me to stop at this point, because rather than wait till the end, I'd like to be able to make some comments whilst everybody is basically still with us in meeting mode. And that is that at the start of this meeting, on behalf of all councillors and our staff here, we did want to pay our respects to Shane Scanlon, somebody who's really done so much for our city and the way that we work and what we do here. We want to acknowledge his recent passing, very, very sad passing. And Shane was the founding editor of our much-loved Docklands News, and then its sister publications, the CBD News and Southbank News. In building a successful local media empire, he was lovingly known as the Rupert Murdoch of inner city media by many. And with the very first edition in 2003, Shane pursued and delivered stories impacting the lives of our community for over 15 years. Shane established himself as the respected and passionate journalist, not only for Docklands but also for neighbouring precincts. And his ability to understand the issues, to champion them and to galvanise efforts both in the community and across our organisation to really important and significant issues in our community is something that we are very grateful for and have created a legacy that we all benefit from. Shane over and above all of that, really helped hold a council accountable, regularly criticising us and identifying our shortcomings. And all of us amongst our team, management team and our councillors came to really feel very appreciative for the effort that Shane put in, knowing that every time he did that, he was doing it to create better outcomes for our community. As the city bounces back again from the latest lockdown, I strongly believe, we all strongly believe, that there has never been a more important time for our community news and the role that it plays in creating connections and advocating for positive change. And we recognise that Shane really started that for us here in the city of Melbourne, and long may that continue. He is leaving a legacy that makes our community more connected and keeps our residents and businesses informed on so many stories that may otherwise go untold. And I want to add to that so much that is inspiring and motivating and really helps lift us all up through his publications. We want to extend our deepest condolences to Scoop Scanlon's family and to all the media professionals he helped to mentor through his hyper-local publications. And again, I want to reiterate our gratitude and our recognition of Shane's leadership and sheer hard work and determination. And Melbourne is a better place for Shane Scanlon. So thank you. And thank you to everybody for allowing us to take that moment at this time in the meeting. We are moving into reports from management. There are 10 reports from management for consideration in the open session this evening. And the first one is item 6.1, adoption of the proposed council plan for 2021 to 2025. Councillors, do we need a presentation on this item? No. Then I am planning to move the motion that appears on the screen here. Now, we have just been through a special FMC where we heard a lot of verbal submissions. We have received and read our written submissions. And the attachments in 4 and 5, as noted in the motion, set out both the points made by the public, management's response, and then attachment 5 is the table of changes suggested for the council plan and the rationale. And I appreciate that members of the public won't have had the opportunity to see that, but I'm also conscious that many of our councillors tonight will talk to that, and the council plan that we're approving incorporates those changes that we have reviewed, discussed and agreed, subject to debate this evening. I'm looking for a seconder to the motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you very much. Well, this is a momentous occasion where we're considering a council plan that represents the work of so many people. And I want to firstly take a moment to recognise members of the public who participated in our community consultation program, hours spent in workshops and sharing stories, ideas and aspirations with us and our team. Thank you so much to the 41 people who provided written submissions to our council plan and the 12 speakers who came this afternoon to provide verbal submissions. Thank you so much in everything you've done to help develop this plan, review the draft and provide feedback and contributions. We hope you feel proud of this council plan and can see your work and, importantly, your expectations and aspirations reflected in this plan. I want to say thank you to our City of Melbourne team, to everybody that's been involved in this very important process for us as councillors, to have a plan that reflects the work that will be undertaken and delivered over our council term. There really is no more important plan for us, and we recognise that the City of Melbourne team, right across the organisation, from our CEO Justin Hanney, the executive leadership team, down into all of the branches, have contributed to the thinking and the work and the thoughtfulness around what's relevant, what's important now into the future and how we're going to go about delivering. All of that work is represented in this plan. So thank you very much. We know also that plans of this type take a lot of determination, and I want to acknowledge the efforts of our councillors in taking the volume of information, of recognising the work that's happened to date at council, of considering the COVID situation that we found ourselves in, and the efforts that are going to be required for us to lead, for us to deliver, for us to respond to our community, and to feel confident that everything that we will be doing over the next 4 years is governed and reflected by this document. But thank you, councillors, for the effort that's gone in, and of course so many new councillors as well as existing to get across that volume of work has been considerable. So thank you very much. This is a plan that really balances the breadth of services and activities that are provided by local governments, but in our case, a capital city local government, which really brings an element of strategy and delivery over and above. I say that because we need to respond to so many different stakeholders. That includes our residents, our local business owners, workers who come in and out of the city every day, and long may those numbers grow, students and international students, investors and their assets in the city, developers, builders, visitors, all of whom have short-term expectations on what are expected as core services, and long-term expectations of what it means for the livability and productivity of this city. And this is our council plan that balances all of those aspects and agendas. It is about delivering on the basics, getting our core services right, and I look also to the effort that's gone into elements such as cleaning the city, safety in the city, well-being of our constituents and the well-being and belonging into the future of being a very inclusionary and diverse city. I think about the bigger and longer term aspirations and ambitions that we have that are reflected in this council plan across elements such as the immediacy of responding to climate change and what we need to do to set ourselves up as a sustainable city into the future, but also what needs to happen now to respond to COVID in an economic way, but also what sets us up again as an engine room for this state and this nation. All of those elements are considered and covered across this council plan. And of course, as Chair of Aboriginal Melbourne, I can't miss on a really important aspect, I think really a statement and a benchmark for how we operate as a city that respects such an ancient heritage, but also understands how we can bring people together, embrace the differences that we have, to value those and to incorporate those into a plan that really moves us forward. This 4 years are like COVID dog years. We're looking to achieve so much out of this 4 years, and I believe this council plan includes all of that. I said this earlier, but during COVID, we really shifted into a city of yes. This council plan has a vision of being a city of possibility that encapsulates the excitement, the hope, the positivity and the optimism that we need to lead as we come out of COVID. But importantly, to be able to set this city up for the future, we have to be a city that delivers, and that's what we see and what we will continue to be vigilant and determined about together with our executive team, is a city that delivers and a city where anything is possible. I'm really delighted to have worked with everybody and played my part in delivering this council plan for consideration this evening. For all of those reasons, I'm happy to move over to you, Councillor Hakim, our seconder. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I want to echo all the words you've shared as well. It's been a fantastic process and one of great learning, but also engagement, which is really important. I do want to also thank everyone who's taken part in this process, from the public to the work the officers have done and to the involvement that councillors have had time and planning is critical to delivering better plan, to delivering a better plan, and we have certainly taken that time and considered time to ensure that's come through deliberative engagement processes, which you can also read there on the plan. Importantly, the community mandate was clear in our discussions, and that's why what our community aspirations are made up of. And I think all councillors can move forward knowing that this mandate has come very strongly from our community. A couple of items I do want to bring attention to, in particular myself, around safety. Safety, a critical factor in recognising safety beyond just physical safety. These are aspects that change the lives of people living, working and visiting our municipality in every single way, and something that has become even more important now as we've come through the pandemic and as we continue to be as part of this pandemic. So a really important mandate that's come through loud and clear, and something we've put attention to. So looking forward to seeing that develop over the next 4 years. Another item I think is we speak a lot about inclusive, and we've heard a lot about inclusive economy. So that economy of the future is going to be really critical in how we create that inclusivity. Really what we are saying through this, through our safety, through our inclusive economy, through every single aspect of the aspirations, is regardless of your background, you are welcome in the city of Melbourne. And I think that's really important. And finally, I want to bring attention to startups, to things like Invest Melbourne that we're doing. It is really important for us to create the environment for startups and for organizations that innovate and bring us into the future. We play a really important part in that. And I'm really excited about what that can do, particularly with the working hand in glove with the other items, with our aspirations around climate emergency and recognizing the circular economy, and that all these aspects work well together and ultimately deliver for our community and for our economy and for our municipality. This plan is about foundations for the future. It is, as Lord Mayor shared around as well, ensuring we are governing well with Aboriginal people, with Melburnians, and with our municipality. It is setting those foundations, and it's something that we will continue to improve and work through, and has aspirations to that. This is really now the start of deliberate action as part of this council's plan, and to build on our community vision for the city of Melbourne, that city of possibility, an extraordinary city. I am really glad to second the adoption of the proposed council plan. I put it to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hakim. Are there other speakers to this motion? Councillor Lippitt.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Can I just ask a very quick procedural question first? The paper before us says that attachments 4 and 5 will be tabled at the meeting, and we're endorsing what's in attachments 4 and 5. Can I just check, how are we ensuring that what's being decided is being minuted and also published? What's the process there? Thank you.
So, Lord Mayor, the attachments 4 and 5 are the same documents that FMC adopted, albeit with different numbers immediately beforehand, but they've now been changed for 4 and 5. They were 3 and 4 in the last meeting. After the council adopts the council plan resolution tonight and also the budget tonight, after that, so either this evening or tomorrow morning, depending on timing, to get things, which is just a matter of practicality of how late the meeting goes, they will be uploaded so that they will form part of the attachments for the public if they were going in to have a look at those items as part of the meeting papers.
And so for those FMC minutes, will those attachments be appended to the minutes, or are they appended to the reports that went to the Future Melbourne Committee?
We'll do it for both.
For both, okay. So they will be there. Absolutely clear. Thank you.
And it's more just a timing thing.
Thanks. Thanks for that clarification, Michael. And I might as well start there by thanking you, Michael, and every staff member who has helped us to get through a comprehensive process, and a process that isn't just about getting 11 councillors to agree on a document. Far from it. That's the tip of the iceberg. This is, as Councillor Hakeem says, a plan that is for the entire community, and it is a plan that seeks to guide the work of the better part of 2,000 staff. And, of course, it also seeks to do that political work of finding the sentiment of the 11 councillors that are the governing body of the council. And that is no easy process, and it's been a joy sometimes to actually be part of that process, even though it's been challenging at times, because I know that what we're ending up with is a document that is holding us to a higher level of accountability, I think, than the council plans that have gone before. It is underpinned by a level of strategic planning and expertise that is absolutely thorough and has got the very hard work and expertise of some incredibly talented people on our staff and among our community going into it. And so to all of our staff in particular who have helped facilitate this process, I want to say thank you. To those as well who have facilitated those community discussions, I don't think Brendan's here, but his team as well, Ovula, is certainly here. I want to say thank you. So that's community in all of its guises. That's the business community, that's the residential community, our visitor communities and our student communities, all of our communities. And this is a document that's for them. It is not only our document. The Lord Mayor's done a terrific job giving an overview of what is in this document, so I'm not even going to try to repeat any of that. I just want to acknowledge that this has been a truly collaborative effort, and I'm proud of the way that Council has risen to the challenge of responding to the community's calls for safety, economic revitalisation, and access and affordability in the here and now, while also looking forward and continuing to be that visionary and bold Council, knowing what difficult policy decisions it needs to take in order to ensure that this great city is resilient and is absolutely taking the steps it's needed to rise to the climate emergency diversity challenge and to meet our obligations to reconcile with our First Nations people. So I'm a very proud councillor tonight, and to everyone involved, I want to say a very grateful thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Are there other speakers to this motion on our council plan? Councillor Lalu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and I'll just take the opportunity as well to echo my thanks to everyone involved from City of Melbourne. It's always pretty hard to combine the aspirations of you know, Melbourne into one document, but I think we've gotten pretty close to it. I want to thank Bike Melbourne, Melbourne Uni and other individuals who've took the time to make the feedback, because I think it was really important. And given how big Melbourne is, I like to think that a majority of it is people accept this and is actually quite approval of what we've put up. The feedback provided some really genuine, really key issues, you know, from injecting room to climate change to mental health. But again, it just shows the breadth of what this city actually covers. For me, you know, there was a key couple that I didn't really talk too much last time, but for me, economy of the future is one of the key ones, especially the easiest place to start and grow a business, because we know that we're going to need to kick up the economy once we come out of this COVID. And also the international relationships and also the global competitive innovations ecosystem is so crucial, because Melbourne, we shouldn't think of ourselves as just a silo. We should be thinking of a part in the global context. And, you know, we can achieve, because we have one of our strengths, which is we've actually managed COVID relatively well. And a lot of the business will be looking to, hopefully, if they're looking to move, they consider Melbourne first and not Sydney and Brisbane or South Australia. And we are still higher in terms of livability than those cities, and hopefully looking forward to seeing more business here in Melbourne. Also noting that growth will be a real key for Melbourne, and a lot of this council plan does actually tackle that, and I hope that, you know, we really do attract a lot of good talent and people, because there's going to be a global demand for talent, and Melbourne should be really up there. I note that at the intergenerational report that was recently released, there's some really key insight into that, which I think in some ways mirrors or talks to also our council plan as well. But I think also knowing that the federal government has a lot of these reports as well, and how we can actually go into take advantage of some of those insights and findings would be quite crucial. Couple of other things, unique identity place. Where else would we not be without QVM in there? So it's great to see that we're delivering on QVM. And also the access and affordability. For me, it's one of the key issues, because, you know, food security, a lot of the students who lives in Melbourne do face that challenge. And, you know, I want to thank really a lot of the non-for-profits and social, such as like Food Bank and many others who really helped unload that. But look, just wanted to thank the ELT again, and also all the staff. I want to thank the community for all their input. And again, as I mentioned in FMC, I hope that you engage with us for the next 4 years as well, because ultimately this is your council plan, and we want to ensure that you are engaged with us while we deliver this.
Good. Thanks, Councillor Lu. Other speakers to the motion? DLM.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I'm conscious that this has been through a number of public forums, so I just really want to make one simple and final point. And it's this, that the next 4 years are probably amongst the most important years that the City of Melbourne, that Melbourne has ever faced. And speaking as an individual councillor, but I think I probably speak for all councillors and for all of us here in this room, I think we all feel the weight of that responsibility, the magnitude of the task that's in front of us, but I think we are all very, very committed to seeing Melbourne come back, and not just come back to its former glory, but be better than ever. And I think this plan gives us a framework and a roadmap to achieve that. And now it's all about us getting on and delivering.
Good. If there are no other speakers, I'm putting this motion to the vote. All those in favour of this motion, please raise your hands. It's passed unanimously. Congratulations, everybody. It's a big one. It deserves a big clap to everyone involved. Thank you very much. Phew, but don't relax. So we are moving on to agenda item 6.2, which is the Economic Development Strategy 2031, Melbourne's Thriving Economic Future. Councillors, would anyone like a presentation on this item? Nope, thank you very much. I'm proposing to move this motion, and I'm looking for someone to second the motion. Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Well, we are considering a number of very important strategies this evening, and this is one of them, the Economic Development Strategy. We've said this in relation to this moment in time, but let's say it again. There has never been a more important time to focus on Melbourne's economic development. Our city has been hit hard by lockdowns and restrictions. For more than a year now, the City of Melbourne has been working tirelessly to help businesses and workers bounce back again and again. Thank you so much to the City of Melbourne team and all councillors who have been involved in responding to those needs and doing so with much success. The list of activity and effort is long in terms of what's proposed in this strategy as we look forward, and it's certainly a big focus on bouncing back. We hope that we have a runway that is clearer now I don't know. I've just been looking at the headlines and it seems to be changing minute by minute. But here in the city of Melbourne, I think businesses have confidence that we are there to support them and we will continue to do that. One example of that is the Melbourne Money program currently being delivered. Thousands of extra customers have been coming into city restaurants, cafes and bars. As of this evening, more than $3.5 million is being rebated back to diners, meaning that almost $20 million in value has been delivered as a part of this Melbourne Money program. Congratulations to everybody and an important part of driving economic outcomes. Outdoor dining has also been a huge success. It's a program and initiative that will continue under our economic development strategy, recognising the importance of this sector and as a way that we have been able to support them and will do ongoing. Our events industry, we know our pedestrian foot traffic grows every time we have major events in this city and we want to continue our support. We've got some elements to be considered in the next item in the budget, but to say that doing what we can around outdoor, public realm permit fees, and extending support to the event sector is important. Not only that, elements such as hospitality, retail, culture and entertainment are key to bringing our workers back to the city. They are intertwined in a way that makes our city absolutely distinctive. This strategy, Melbourne's Thriving Economic Future, has been developed to guide how our city will continue to respond to immediate economic challenges like COVID, but really in the granularity, how do we bring more workers back into our city CBD as one, we are facing ways in which we can grow our city economy over the next 10 years. It identifies 8 key priorities and associated measures that will enhance our economy in the short, medium and long term. This strategy has been shaped by much work and many voices with significant engagement and consultation across our key stakeholders, from community members to business groups, the state and federal governments, industry groups, our precinct groups, and the business community more broadly. Thank you to everybody that's been involved. 103 individuals and stakeholder representatives provided feedback on the draft strategy, which is absolutely brilliant. It gives us confidence that this has been well reviewed, well tested, has relevance and will have impact as we go forward. Thank you to the team and again to our councillors. There's been a hell of a lot of work and conversations that have gone into this. A lot of evidence and data and understanding of trends, and we do appreciate the work that's gone into it, Katrina and Andrew in particular, so thank you. We are at a pivotal point in our city's history. We aspire to create a thriving, a fairer and a more inclusive economy that works for Melburnians, for businesses, for investors, both in our municipality and those that come from far and wide. This is a strategy that supports us as a city of possibility. If we do this well, we know that we can deliver on our aspirations to have 270,000 residents living in our municipality, to have 600,000 jobs within our municipality as the engine room of the state economy, and a contribution of $150 billion by 2031, which establishes us or reminds and re-establishes us as one of the drivers of our national economy. That's exactly the place that Melbourne should be in an economic sense. These are aspirations in implementing this strategy, and every effort that we can make over the next 4 years to contribute to this 10-year economy will be pivotal to us being able to achieve on those aspirations. I'm commending it to councillors for voting this evening and looking forward to delivery of said strategy. Over to you, Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And can I echo your comments? This is an ambitious strategy with clear aspirations to bring Melbourne back as the engine room of the Victorian economy again, because we know that COVID will not last forever and that with the right actions, Melbourne and Melbourne's economy has a very, very bright future. And we will achieve those aspirations through a number of priorities and actions. And looking at the community consultation that occurred around this draft strategy, there are a number of themes that emerged. And one of those was around priorities. And the most highly ranked priority from 48% of respondents was about making us a business-friendly city. And for my part, I think that is a critical one. We want this to be the city of choice to do business in. And we have a clear strategy in this document about how to achieve that through a number of actions. And that includes digitising our permits and streamlining our processes, which might sound a little bit dull, but the reality is so many business owners around this city spend more and more time dealing with red tape, which means less time growing their businesses and doing what they do best. I'm delighted that we are going to work to cut that red tape and that bureaucratic burden on them so that they can focus on growing their businesses, which we know are the backbone of this city's economy. And I'm delighted we're doing that because it's something that's fairly in our patch at a local government level. But we know that our city's economic recovery and its future growth will require a joint effort. And that's recognised in this plan, including the role that state government must play if our city is to come back from COVID. We all know, and anyone who has walked these streets can see the impact that four lockdowns have taken on this city. One of the most tangible examples of that is the shopfront vacancies, around 20% in May. And so I'm delighted that one of the aspirations in this plan is to get that down below 5%, because we want visitors to this city to see a thriving CBD again. And we're going to do our part in that, but we know that the state government needs to come with us on that journey. So much energy on a state government level has been focused on a public health response to this pandemic, as it should have been. But if our city is to survive and thrive again, it is critical that the state government joins with us and shows a strong commitment to making sure the city of Melbourne, the city of Melbourne, is again the engine room of the Victorian economy. I'm delighted this strategy envisages a strong role for us to play as a city and the involvement of every level of government, and I can't wait to see it delivered because I know it's going to mean great things for all Melburnians.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Are there other speakers to this motion? Councillor Lelou.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and I want to start first by thanking Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network, Offshore and Specialist Ships Australia, PausFest, Property Council of Australia, Italian Chamber of Commerce, Committee for Melbourne, Victorian Tourism, VTIC, and many of the individuals who have actually provided feedback. The reason I call them out, because I think if they make the time and effort to write this, I think we should acknowledge, because it's really important to engage with them. And again, I thank them. I think this is a very important document. Never have we ever faced a devastation issue as this. I've never seen so many for lease signs outside in city of Melbourne. Usually it's always been harder and harder to find shops to rent or even apartments to rent, but yet now we have completely gone the other side, and the world is changing, and how we actually deal with that is going to be really crucial. I note page 7 of the 30, our aspirations. I think it's, you know, those are really, really good, but you know, some of the other, as part of the economic development strategy, we also got to think outside the box. And, you know, for me, there's also a one big part, which is aspiration, which is 100% vaccinated, how we can get everyone vaccinated, because it's going to be really crucial that we do not treat COVID as something that I think we can defeat very, very easily. Singapore is actually Singapore government has actually now recognised that we have to live with COVID, and I think it's a really interesting insight of how they actually deal with it. They recognise that we're going to get vaccinated and we're actually going to be living with COVID, and ultimately it's actually going to be and how they're actually tackling this is going to be interesting. For me, aspiration wise, I was really keen. We be the number one most livable city again, and also the number one student city. We obviously have dropped down a little bit of that. I haven't seen where we are in the student city. But it's really crucial that we don't have any more... let me rephrase that. It's really important that we use the lockdown as the very, very last resort and absolutely need it. We are the second world, the longest in lockdown for metro area in the world. And I think that is a title that I don't really want Melbourne to have. I'd rather have the other titles. But again, it's really, really crucial that the state government also takes note of that. And it's not just the state government, it's also federal government and also industry that we need to work with in order to realise this document. We really need to, be mindful of the fact that, we work in a partnership with federal government. So federal government really need to do a lot around the vaccine rollout. The state government really need to stop, locking us down whenever it's one little issue. In mindful of thinking of the business that affects, and the industry, and really needs to come together to actually work on it. And I would also say to the many, many landlords, and also the people who owns assets within Melbourne, to play a leadership role to revitalise Melbourne, because there are so many small business suffering because of the rent and negotiations not opening. And I would really encourage that too, because it's in the best interest of city to work together. Finally, I just want to end by thanking Katrina and also Andrew and the team for putting this. I know it's not easy, and I know we've been through different iterations, but I'm really glad that a lot of our lesson learned and our strength have been put into this, and I really do appreciate all the insights. And also, it's very, very rich in data, very, very rich in terms of strategy, and I really, really, it's something that I haven't really seen for a long time, but I just wanted to put my appreciation out there.
Thanks, Councillor Lalu. Are there other speakers to this motion? Councillor Hakim?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. We've spoken a lot on this one, so I'll just keep it brief. I just wanted to add also my recognition of the work that Katrina and Andrew have done in relation to this particular strategy. There's been countless hours from so many people, but I know that you've worked so hard on putting this together. It is so incredible to see an economic strategy and the strength in this one that takes into account the broader context, but also shows what a true future economy could look like. I think we should be proud of that. We should all be proud of that. And the community should be proud of the work put in here and around the resurgence in a future of a city that looks different and stronger, more thriving into the future. So really excited about the actions that will go into work now that we're adopting, and once we adopt this strategy. I'll be supporting the strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hakim. Other speakers? Deputy Lord Mayor?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Can I also thank Katrina and Andrew and the team for producing what is an absolutely extraordinary bit of work and absolutely first-rate bit of analysis, but a first-rate strategy and plan for Melbourne. It's interesting that there seems to be this idea that getting some currency in some quarters, that if all the economic activity that happened in our central cities, if somehow that was distributed out to the suburbs and the regions and it all sort of netted out equally, then that might not be such a bad thing. I've actually never heard such economic bunkum in all my life, and I can't believe that we're hearing this idea doing the rounds. The fact is, Melbourne as are other leading global cities, are absolute magnets for economic activity and for excellence. The agglomeration effects of cities is actually the secret source of modern economic success in countries like Australia. And when I'm talking about centres of excellence, you know, you think about a business like BHP, the world's biggest resource company. You think about CSL, an organisation which was started just on 100 years ago with the last major pandemic that this country saw, now one of the world's leading biotech companies. You think about universities like the University of Melbourne, RMIT, which are truly world-leading institutions. These sorts of organisations are embedded and part of the DNA of a city, and such a critical part of and just examples of why we need to continue to think deeply about how we drive our city economy so that we can continue to create economic opportunities, not just for small businesses, but for small and medium businesses to grow into world beaters like them. We also need to just reflect on the importance of cities as magnets for people and economic activity. People don't get on a plane in Shanghai to come to Melbourne to visit Glen Waverley. They might end up living in Glen Waverley. It's one of the world's most livable suburbs. But, you know, the bright lights of Glen Waverley aren't what bring people here from around the world. It's our central city. It's the size, it's the excitement, it's the buzz of the central city, of our inner city, which brings people from around the world to Melbourne. And so that's why this economic strategy is so important in ensuring that we've got a roadmap, a game plan to bring our city economy back. We've obviously, as we've heard from some other councils this evening, we have received a significant number of knocks as a city economy in recent times, but I think it also needs to be noted that there are plenty of very positive signs out there. I know we all follow those pedestrian count figures very closely, and if you've been noticing over the last couple of days, we've been seeing 80 and 90% uptick in pedestrian figures compared to the previous 3-week averages, which shows to me that people will come back to the city when they're allowed to do so and when those magnetic draw cards are in place to do so. So let me just conclude where I began by saying this is a terrific, well-thought-through bit of public policy, a terrific economic strategy, and it sets us up for what is going to be a very big 4 years ahead of us.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Are there other speakers to the motion? Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Campbell, as well. I agree with you both, and I want to echo the words of the Deputy Lord Mayor about the agglomeration effects of cities and what we had, but also what we could have. I think this is a really optimistic strategy. And I'm actually quite excited about a lot of what's in here and what we're looking at in terms of a future city that is prosperous but also more inclusive. It is underpinned, as the Deputy Lord Mayor says, by extraordinary amount of analysis and work. And so I want to add my thanks to that of other councillors. It's challenging for me with a limited amount of economic education to go through this process, but it strikes me that with all the knocks that the Deputy Lord Mayor has talked about, the council's role is to decide whether it needs to facilitate a general recovery to where we were, or if it needs to pick winners as the city economy revitalises and those agglomeration economies can either be curated, or if we take that standoff approach, or if we need to completely rethink the value proposition of the city. The test in 12 months' time, when we look back on what we adopted 12 months ago, will be really, really interesting, because this is a really dynamic space that we're working within, and I'll be fascinated to... I reread this again on the weekend. I've read this document so many times now, but reading it again in 12 months will be an interesting task. But I just wanted to... I couldn't help but say one thing, and that is that it strikes me that there's still a drastically different accounts of what the future of the city looks like, what the spatial distribution of different types of jobs should be in Victoria if you ask the Capital City Council compared to if you ask the state government compared to if you ask the Commonwealth government. There is still a massive amount of work to do to join up those levels of government to come up with a unified vision of what the future of the centre of the city is, what its purpose is, what those land uses are going to be, and what government needs to do to incentivise different classes of jobs, different classes of land uses for the good of everyone. Those are really complicated questions. We have done some excellent work here, I think, and I would say that, on reimagining the value proposition for the central city. It should be a joy to travel into the central city at all times. I think those congestion-busting opportunities are extensive, and the creative renaissance that we could be on the verge of could also be absolutely fantastic, as well as the further residential boosts that we could see with the central city being a home to so many more people. But that is not a language that is necessarily spoken by the state government. And I'm struck by the words of the Deputy Lord Mayor that this simplistic decentralisation agenda that we hear from other levels of government is something that we and they need to work a whole lot harder on to join up our visions, because that is still the biggest gap I can see in seeing this strategy come to fruition. It's continuing to work with the state in particular, more so than the Commonwealth, for the good of our citizens and for good of our great city, because there's still a lot of work to do on that front to join up government. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Other speakers to the motion? Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so I declare the motion carried. I'm sorry, but we have to clap again because it is another momentous strategy and a 10-year vision for our thriving economic future. So well done. This brings us, and thank you, to the next momentous item, 6.3. It's a big night tonight. Adoption of the draft budget 2021-22. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No? Thank you. Then I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Lalu, thank you. And a councillor to second the motion. Deputy Lord Mayor, thanks. Over to you, Councillor Lalu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And indeed, it is very important because while we have the council plan and economic strategy, how do we pay for it? The most important part is definitely the budget. I just want to say thank you to our team for the great work that they've done. It's probably one of the most challenging ones that is, I'm sure Michael, our CFO, has done. I'll bet you wish you were back in corporate world once you've already done this. But the fact is, it is more important than ever to get the budget right. And I'm really proud to say that, you know, this, if we do vote yes to it, it is one that will set us up for recovery and it will get Melbourne back to where it is, including all the council plan, all the strategies that we have, and it's quite important. I wanted to thank the list of people, who has provided the feedback again on this. It's very important, and I thank them for the time and effort to make those submissions. I know that it's everyone have a different variance of views, and I think it's very, very important. I think we saw in the FMC a lot of people talked about all the different things in the budget. I can't help myself, but I'll say, for the ASU, if there is any parliament, members of parliament in state who wants to donate their charity raise, they can donate to Melbourne, because I think, we've been doing the heavy lifting for some of the state government's role. For me, there's reading through all the feedbacks, when it says, working with Victoria Police to improve safety of the communities, electrical vehicles. There's not a lot of changes, but, the 50% discount for public free events, also, and moving the outdoor dining permits from 1st November to 1st November to and not July 1st. Really just iterates the, you know, our commitment to Melbourne and growing that. It's important. You know, it might seem kind of a small to a lot of people, but, you know, this means a lot, to, especially for the business who are really, really hurting. I really just want to also end by saying, look, this is one of our biggest budget and, you know, there is an item coming up, which is, later on, which is our procurement policy. And I just wanted to really iterate the point that, you know, this is a really big budget. We're really, we're really looking to spend a lot of money and we're really interested in ensuring promoting local businesses and working with them. And that is why, you know, I'm really keen to, when we discussed, 6.10, the procurement policy, you know, really keen to get that $790 million in terms of the budget to local businesses who really willing to stay in the city to, you know, invest in Melbourne, but also for many others who, whether it be outside of Sydney, Melbourne, in Victoria, whether it be in Australia or even internationally, to be able to partner with us, because that 10% will really important. So, look, won't comment too much on this, but also want to thank CEO and also ELT for, you know, putting all these, I know we can't get everything together, but nonetheless, this is something that I think, it's our biggest budget yet, and looking forward and our commitment to delivering it will be crucial in the next 4 years.
Thanks, Councillor Liu. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures, and this is indeed an extraordinary budget. I can also say with 100% confidence that it's a budget that is right for the city and right for the times. It is a budget which is a record $790 million budget, biggest ever delivered by the City of Melbourne, and it includes a massive investment in the reactivation and revival of the city to support businesses, keep Melburnians in jobs and develop more inclusive communities. I do think it's a budget which makes investments which will set us up for decades to come. In terms of sort of centrepieces, I think the $245 million infrastructure investment is a record investment, a much needed investment, and a transformative investment in the livability of our and attractions of our city. I also think the $100 million towards the $200 million Melbourne City Revitalisation Fund, which was secured by our Lord Mayor, CEO, and others in quite extraordinary circumstances, is a major centrepiece of the budget. And again, will help bring back the buzz and bring Melbourne back better. Can I single out Councillor Lei Lu for his wonderful work and efforts in helping navigate us through this challenging period and helping us land such a tremendous budget. Can I also single out Michael Tanache and our CEO, Justin Hanney, for also, and Alison as well, Leighton, I should say, for the many, many, and countless others, for the many, many, many hours that I know were put into developing and delivering on the budget. This budget has obviously been through a number of iterations through various public forums, which we, I think, do quite well at the City of Melbourne. I should note that there have been some changes which we've agreed to today. They include the deferral of outdoor dining fees and fees for buskers from July to November. I think that's a small but significant step, which will help bring back the buzz to our city. This version of the budget that's before us this evening also includes a measure which will offer 50% discounts for certain public event fees for a period of 12 months. Again, a small but important measure which is critical to us bringing back the buzz for Melbourne. And then finally, I just note that this budget contains a further new measure, which is $50,000 in expenditure for the Royal Park tram stop, Poplar Avenue intersection, which I think has been rightly identified in submissions as being a dangerous intersection which requires action. And so there's $50,000 in the budget to update design works, complete further survey works, and also position us to work with the Victorian government to see the necessary safety and other works that are required for the intersection to be undertaken. So all up, I'm very, very pleased and proud of this budget and looking forward to voting for it very shortly.
Thank you, DLM. Are there other speakers to this motion? Councillor Hakim?
Just very briefly, want to also echo those words and extend thanks to everyone who has been involved in this. This is a great deal of work that goes into budgets. Often the accountants are thought are the last people to be considered in a room. So I want to say thank you very much, and thanks, Michael, and thanks, Liam, and thank you, Councillor Leleux, for your work as well in this. I know you have worked to ensure all those numbers are all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted around this. Importantly, I just want to note the neighbourhood statements as part of the budget. This is a new way to engage and be accountable to the community. Thank you to our CEO for bringing that to fruition. I think it's a really important way of doing that. It will be really fantastic to be able to create opportunity for our communities to engage through those capital budgets. That is something that is really critical, and we will show and must show strong financial management when it comes to our capital program. This is a record budget and it'll have record scrutiny. And so I want to assure everyone that we are committed to increased transparency, deliberative engagement, and importantly committed to action to deliver in our budget on based on evidence and data. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Other speakers to this motion? Well, I was going to say something. Of course, this is the third big strategic document that we are considering this evening, and really delighted to support the motion being put and agree with the comments made so far. At $790 million, the biggest budget that we've ever delivered here at the City of Melbourne, we're investing to reactivate and revive the city, support businesses, keep Melburnians in jobs, and develop inclusive and safe communities. We're setting the city up for decades to come, and this is exactly what we should be doing with budgets of this scale and significance. $244 million on a capital works and infrastructure program, again, the biggest that we've ever delivered here at the City of Melbourne, and will deliver jobs when they're needed the most, but also set this city up for a bright future. $545 million in operating expenditure, with $50 million of that for core services such as waste and recycling and city cleaning. $100 million of the City Revitalisation Fund to be spent on really driving activity, valuable activity in the city. And we should not forget that there is a rates discount, recognising the hardship that so many of our ratepayers continue to go through as a result of this pandemic. We are delivering a record budget. It is a deficit budget, but recognising that we return to surplus in the 23 financial year, reflecting that good financial management. Congratulations to everybody who's been involved in this. This budget represents the fact that we have the resources to deliver on the first year of our council plan, and it also reflects that we are being bold and we are being brave and we are bringing back the buzz, and I'm delighted to support this motion this evening. If there are no other speakers, I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Well done to everyone involved. Thank you so much. Okay, that takes us to the next item on the agenda this evening, which is item 6.4, and just as exciting, the revenue and rating plan. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, thank you then. I'm going to call on a councillor to move this motion. Councillor Lalou, thank you, and a councillor to second the motion. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you. And over to you, Councillor Lalou.
Nothing really much to add except for what is already there. Notes that we've gone through this and it's one of the very important documents that we need to approve as part of the new Act. And looking for, and we just approved the budget. Again, this is the revenue rating plan, which underpins a lot of what we actually say in the budget. So looking forward to approving this tonight.
Thank you. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Sorry, nothing to add other than just to thank the officers involved in preparing this document, noting that it does fulfil our obligations under the Local Government Act and the new reporting framework and, again, a fundamental building block in helping position the city, setting up the city for 4 years of success.
Thank you. Any other speakers to this motion? I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. On to item 6.5, which is Social Partnerships Program 2021 to 2023 panel recommendations. Are
Lord
there
Mayor,
conflicts? Yes, thank you.
I'll declare a material conflict of interest. One of the applicants is has an officer who is a donor to an election campaign, and so there's an applicable gift involved.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Councillor Ball?
And I share the same material conflict.
Thanks, Councillor Ball. It's handy if you're both in the same spot at least, so that'll be good. Thank you, councillors. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you, and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Griffiths, over to you, Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. These community grants provide social partnerships that allow the city to do a number of things and really empower our communities to respond to those local needs. It allows us to partner with community organisations to deliver shared outcomes. It allows activation of community participation and it is a critical part of how we support our community. It's really important to note assessment is done by an independent external panel and is assessed against transparent application criteria. Their recommendations are put to us today. There are always more organisations than funds, so I'd like to thank all the applicants and congratulate the selected applicants in this. Working with community to deliver is so critical. It creates not only a social cohesion, but it allows priorities, social priorities to also be addressed through creative ways and through some of those social partnerships. In this set, we've got priorities that have been engaged around addressing homelessness, increasing community participation, contributing to community safety, improving mental well-being generally around social justice and human rights, but also around addressing discrimination and improving access to equality and equity. And a really important one is around addressing loneliness and isolation, something that we all hear about so much post-COVID and what's happened through the various lockdowns. I would commend to you the report from and the recommendations from the independent panel and move this motion.
Thank you so much, Councillor Hakim. To you, Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Hakim, for providing a very comprehensive overview of what's in the motion before us. I too would like to thank the council officers and particularly the people who sat on the panel and took the time to assist us as a council by reading all of the applications. And again, thank you to all of the applicants. I was reflecting when I was reading through some of the successful applicants, really just the very broad range of plans and ideas that are out in the community and that we're able to assist. Sitting through the FMC this afternoon, we had numerous groups come to us and say how important it was to continue to consult with the community and to empower the community. And when I look through the kinds of projects that are here assisting some of the most recently arrived people in our city, some of the most vulnerable people in our city, but also doing it in a way that empowers them and that really utilises their lived experience in a meaningful way to address some of the most fundamental problems that we have. I think it's fantastic just to see this many projects coming through. I really thoroughly urge everyone to support this motion and to celebrate the kinds of projects that are in there. I hope that we really go out and communicate to the broader Melbourne population what it is that we're doing through these projects.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Other speakers to this motion? Well, thank you to Councillor Hakim and to Councillor Griffiths for bringing this motion to us tonight. I'd just like to reflect that this motion and all of the work and organisations behind it really reflects that at the City of Melbourne there's, and in the City of Melbourne, there's so much that happens that is delivered through amazing organisations. And after the time that we've had to see that care, that thoughtfulness and that resilience, and to know that we can continue to support organisations that extend our good work out into the community is fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to supporting this motion this evening. There are no other speakers. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. And if we could ask our councillors back in, that would be terrific. Thank you very much. This brings us on to item 6.6, funding support requests, funding support requests June 2021. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, then I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion, please. Our Deputy Lord Mayor and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Lalu, thank you. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks. Thanks, Lord Mayor. As the council representative for the Committee for Melbourne, I'm very pleased to be able to support management's recommendation for the city to purchase a table for the annual dinner event. I think the evening will be a fantastic opportunity for business and community leaders across various industries in Melbourne to come together and reflect not only on the challenges but also some of the good news stories that Melbourne has experienced from the past year, and importantly to look to the year ahead as well. In the past, the annual committee for Melbourne events have provided thought-provoking themes that drive really important conversations for Melbourne, and were fitting for the time. And so I can only imagine what exciting theme the Committee for Melbourne has in store for this year's dinner, but also for this year's programs. I'd like to also especially acknowledge the advocacy and city-shaping role that the Committee for Melbourne plays in Melbourne, and it requires a very special and dedicated group of passionate people to bring together 150 organisations from Greater Melbourne's business, academic and community sectors. And I think it's only fitting that one way in which the City of Melbourne can show its support for the Committee for Melbourne's work is through our attendance at this annual dinner. So have no hesitation in recommending that councillors support this motion.
Thank you. Councillor Lalu.
Very briefly as well, more than happy to support this given the role that the Community for Melbourne has played in shaping Melbourne. The work and advocacy that they have done has been tremendous, and more so especially during the COVID-19 time, and to bring everyone together to try and tackle the issues and the problems, I think it's really much needed. I know that it's a committee for Melbourne, and given that we are the Melbourne City Council, it is more than fitting that we sponsor, because the work that they do is for the benefit of us and as the people, and they're looking forward to what will come of the night.
Great, thank you. Are there other speakers to this motion? No, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare the motion carried. Thanks, councillors. The next item is 6.7, Precinct Program Year 1 Funding Report. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, then I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Louis, thank you. And I'm going to second the motion. So over to you, Councillor Louis. Thanks.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. It's so appropriate for this evening that we've just earlier adopted the budget. The precinct program is a program that's been one of the longest, I think, that I can remember in my 20-odd years at the city, pardon me, at the City of Melbourne. But it does give me great pleasure to move it this evening. And also, tonight we can welcome our 10th precinct member, the Melbourne City North Business Association, which will have its own geographic area to manage. But the precincts, I think, over the COVID recovery of 2020 and 2021 have been a great example of what the support that they've been able to provide businesses on the ground, a true grassroots program whereby they've worked with businesses that have been struggling, businesses that haven't been positive, but been able to liaise together with the City of Melbourne to be able to try and give them some hope and some, I suppose, some concepts of how to sort of survive until such times as the city really reopens back up. But it's tonight's about expenditure, and this program, we've now grown it to just a bit over $830,000. So it is significant, but also the numbers are also significant as well. So between the 10 precincts, they'll have some membership of some 1,300 plus members, with the only paid person in those precincts those members will be the executive officers, as they have been over the previous programs. Everybody else, the presidents, the committee members, are all volunteers, hardworking volunteers that have put a huge amount of effort into trying to support all the businesses in their geographic area. The new precinct, the Melbourne City North Business Association, as I said, will have their own geographic area, but all businesses within that geographic area will be welcome to join that, as they are with all the other precincts as well. But we haven't seen a new precinct for, I just can't remember when, but it's been many, many years since we have approved a new precinct, and there is a rigorous process for precincts to be able to join and get funding under this program. But can I thank Chief Zegan, of course, Katrina, Andrew, Chairs, and the team, because I know it's not the rigorous process that every one of them go through, plus the acquittals annually that these programs, it's not automatic funding, but it's a matter of they'll go through the normal acquittals and make sure that they've done all that their business plans have promised. But also, over the last couple of months, with the Melbourne Recovery Fund the $100,000 they've been granted to each of the programs, I mean, some of the prisoners have been extremely creative. I mean, the Docklands Dollars has been a booming success in terms of supporting the hospitality and the hotel businesses and creating activation in those areas. Chinatown last Sunday, I mean, the Lord Mayor was present, also they used part of their funding as part of the Dragon Boat and the Rice Dumpling Festival in Chinatown to try and activate and get some traction in the street. The street is devastated. The precincts have been working with our retail shopping activation. So I think if there's anything through the volunteers that are in all those, we certainly owe them a debt of gratitude for the work they've done over the last 12 plus months in terms of the devastation the city is seeing. So it's great pleasure to be able to move the year one funding. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Louie. Well, I'm really pleased to be seconding this motion this evening, the importance of our precincts and our precinct associations is evident in what's been delivered to date, and it's fabulous that this will continue. I want to acknowledge the executive officers and all of the volunteers that act as committee members, board members, local business leaders in coming to us with those applications to become precinct associations in this council term. And for this year one funding, it takes a huge effort over and above what they otherwise are doing for many of them. So that is terrific. And thank you to our team for assessing and for working with these associations so diligently to make sure that together we can create really positive momentum and outcomes. Thanks for your efforts past and into the future. Thanking you in anticipation. The international evidence is absolutely clear that strong, vibrant shopping precincts are key to economic recovery following COVID-19. That is what the evidence tells us from overseas experience, and it's what we can see here in our city. Strong precincts with the active participation of businesses across all sectors are vital for the regeneration of our broader economy, but community, because so many of these precincts represent community and community activity and support other community programs and outcomes. So it's fantastic to see. Collectively, these business precincts represent over 1,300 business owners and their teams and their customers. That really is worth noting, and it's a terrific way for us to work effectively and exponentially to deliver good outcomes. So really it's a great model and one that's proven to be effective, and I'm glad that we are considering this evening to provide that ongoing support. And well done to our newly established association, the Melbourne City North Business Association. We're looking forward to coming to meet you to understand how we can help you, and well done for showing the gumption and the energy and the leadership to pull that together. And best wishes for very successful initiatives in that precinct within our city, a very important precinct. So for all of those reasons, I'm really happy to support this motion tonight, and I'm looking to see if there are any other speakers to the motion. Councillor Lalu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I just wanted to also thank Councillor Louie and Councillor Chang for the work that they have put into this and going forward as well as portfolio leads. I know you guys, both of you represent us in speaking to a lot of the precincts and having been on, I think, some of those precinct meetings where it's quite long. It's the passion that you see from the people who are involved is very evident. And it's great to see some of the returning faces, but also I'd like to welcome the new precinct as well. You know, the Melbourne is very diverse, and you know, there's always the business and the traders are. We're always very, very keen to hear you know, your feedback and how we can support you. And it's great to see more coming in as well. I note that it's the you know, the precinct program has really delivered on helping the business understand how City of Melbourne is helping them, and in part then they help many of the customers and also stakeholders who come to Melbourne to actually see that. So it is a very, very vital and important part, and more than happy to support it. I also want to thank Shez and also Andrew and Katrina and also the economic team for the work that you done. You guys do. I know a lot of the precinct executives and presidents and everything. It's really hard to get all those everyone, you know, in the same room and talking at the same time. And I know, you know, sometimes it's really to get everyone involved and everything is quite hard. So I really do appreciate the time and effort you guys put in to do that, because we can really see the evidence in terms of, you know, some of the feedback that we have and how we can incorporate the business concierge and many of the other service that we have to ensure that more business knows more about what we do. I think it's interesting because, you know, it takes a load off some of our councillors' back, because a lot of us, we get, you know, emails straight away, and I usually try to, you know, pass it off to the precinct president to say, especially from if it's small business or business, to say, hey, have a chat with these, you know, your precinct or the area that you're in. So, yeah, look, more than happy to support this. And it's a shame Councillor Chang's not here to second this, because I know he was very, very passionate, given he's a small business owner himself, both in the city and also outside of city. I'm not going to hold him against that on that one. You know, it'll be great to, I'm sure he'll be very, very happy to hear how it goes.
Very good point. Councillor Chang would ordinarily be here seconding that motion, but unfortunately at the last minute couldn't make it. So thank you, Councillor Leloup. We are looking for any other speakers to this motion? No? All those in favour, please raise your hands. Unanimous. Excellent. So we can declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. We are moving on to item 6.8, which is review of delegations. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, I'm calling. We want to see it on the screen if we can, but I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion on the screen, and there it is. Amended. Yep. That's the motion that is on the screen, and I'm calling on a councillor to move that motion. Councillor Leloup and a councillor to second the motion. Over. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Over to you, Councillor Leloup.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Not really a lot to say. There was a few changes to the delegation process. It's a very, very vital piece of document, because in order for, you know, City of Melbourne is a very, very big organisation, which takes a lot of decision making, and while that a lot of that comes up to council and also to FMC, I do note that a lot of that work is done by our officers, and a lot of that great work is done by our officers, who actually make those decisions for us to ensure that we are more efficient and very very productive council as well. Note that one of the key changes that we have is a financial delegation of $1.75 million for the Deputy CEO, Alison, and that was mainly because of her role moving from a GM, and we never actually specified a Deputy CEO within the delegation policy. So this is just actually to create and ensure to match her role. Otherwise, it is being presented on the screen.
Thank you. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Nothing to add, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Any other speakers to this motion? No? Then I'm going to put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. 6.9 is referred documents from the 7th of May 2021 Audit and Risk Committee meeting. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Leloup and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you. Over to you, Councillor Leloup.
Nothing really to add, except I just want to thank all the members on the ARC for a very, very important role. As you know, someone who's a part of the Audit and Risk Committee, the things that we discuss there most is very, very critical, and we ensure that a lot of what is being discussed is very relevant. The risk profile of Melbourne has been increased dramatically since COVID, but also other things that we need to keep in mind of. I always want to thank NTT, our internal auditors, but also VAGO, who we work very closely, but also all our independent ARC members who take the time and effort and bring us with great knowledge of their experience and also what they're hearing out there as well. So, nothing much to add.
Thank you. Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Liu. I don't really have anything to add except to say thank you for all the members for taking time. This is a really important committee in ensuring that there is a view from an independent perspective with our members, there, Jeff Stewart and Therese, but also from our discussions with our internal auditors and VAGO, and lots of really important conversations from risk-based approaches and to consideration of any key measures of reporting and ways of accountability for council. And I want to assure everyone that it is a really detailed process, and the committee takes its role very seriously. So thank you to everyone involved, and happy to second this motion.
Excellent. Thank you. I am looking to see if there are any other speakers to this motion. None, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour? It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thanks, team. We're on to item 6.10, which is the new procurement policy. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? Councillor Leppett.
Just a question, if I could. I'm not sure if anyone else wanted a presentation. Just a quick question on Section 7. So Section 7 talks about the procurement, the annual forward procurement plan, and it's on page 8 of 16. The final sentence says, a consolidated view of all annual forward procurement plans is to be presented to council for their information. So council singular. So are we expecting a report to council, or are we expecting a report to council laws for their information? So is this a formal annual report that comes to us for consideration, or are we just going to be briefed on this annually, and does the policy need to be tweaked? Just want to understand what we're adopting. Thank you.
Yes, Councillor, through you, Lord Mayor. Look, it's not necessarily formally adopted, I don't believe, through the through council, but it is a report to councillors.
We don't have anything in the resolution that authorises GMs to make editorial changes, but can we just accept that that word should just be council laws rather than council? At your discretion, Lord Mayor, perhaps?
Yes. Do we want, are we saying that we want to see it up there, or we are acknowledging that?
I don't think it's material enough. I just wanted to understand what the correct interpretation was, and if we're all happy for GMs to add the letters LORS in that section, I reckon close enough is good enough, unless our governance advice is that that's a breach. Thank you.
Better turn this on. Good. All right. So that is the motion being considered. Michael, does that make sense? I'm seeing you look at it. Yep. Yeah.
Then the words would be at the end, and that the annual forward procurement plan is a briefing to councillors rather. So hang on, sorry, are we noting an amendment, or are we actually amending what's recommended to us? I think you're making a further amendment, is that right?
Yeah, I'm just saying to you, we could make it because we're already making an amendment.
Well, I don't think you are. I think you're noting an amendment. So I think if you're seeking to make a further amendment, you might actually like to tweak 10.3, Councillor Leeloo. So I might, that's a much more important issue. I might leave that with you first because that needs to be addressed first. I think we're not noting an amendment. I think you need to actually amend the policy. But I'll just pause and let someone else do the words because I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I'm looking to Phil and Councillor Rees.
I hope you do it on the fly if you want me to help. But
I'm happy with your leave, Phil. So look, I think we probably can do this in two clauses. So let's firstly amend clause 10.3 to read that the policy approves amendment to the policy. So remove the word notes. To, and so you can now remove the word notes. That's it. To approves amendments to the policy to include up to 10% weighting can be applied for sustainable considerations. Yep. Consistent with the existing policy, just to give you a little bit of wriggle room there. And then I would also then suggest a new clause 10.4 that then, authorises management to make any editorial changes required to the policy without making substantive changes that would require approval of councillors. That give you enough wriggle room, but make people who are careful about process happy as well. So, make editorial amendments as needed.
Yeah, and that, look, that'll be fine. In terms of how we would operate, the procurement policy would come to council annually, and the plan would go through councillor forum for agreement with councillors on a regular basis. So we can manage that just through normal management operations with council, but it doesn't need a formal process for the procurement plan.
Okay, now I'm confused. Sorry,
me too.
You just said that it will come to council. What do you mean by it will come to council?
It will come. We can bring it to council through councillor forum.
Okay, so it won't come to a council meeting. So coming to council, I'm interpreting as it will come to a council meeting.
Right.
Well, Kim's going to tell me off.
Sorry, councillors. I just wanted to note, the policy has to be adopted by the council. Local Government Act says that it can't be amended by under delegation. So this policy is a council policy, so you can't authorise management to make amendments to the policy.
Okay. Very good point, Kim. So can we... Before we make this change, Jody, can we erase 10.4? And Michael, is the effect of what you're saying is that even without 10.4, you would still be required to bring this policy back through council forum, thus achieving the procedural objective which Councillor Leppett was trying to have us aspire to in his point earlier? Yeah. Okay. All right, so I think we can therefore erase 10.4, and then just while we're in the editorial mode, can we just move up to 10.2.1, Jody, and after the word 12-month, just make that plural, 12 months?
Yes, so... We're now looking at this, and before we look to support the motion, we've got some other questions. So, Councillor Ball.
Thank you. Regarding this amendment, the 10.3 seems to me inconsistent with number 10 on page 9 of 16 in the policy itself, which says that sustainability lens will be applied irrespective of the value or complexity of the procurement. So it's not optional. It's essential to every procurement contract.
I think it's giving a weighting to it, my understanding. But yeah. I defer to those on the procurement policy, is that, yes, it'll bear consideration, definitely, but this is actually allocating a weighting. Can I? Yeah.
Ravine, are you confirming that? Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Was a very good pickup today, by the way.
Before we keel over from embarrassment, can I just ask if there's a statutory reason why we need to adopt it tonight, or if we can just quickly defer it to the July meeting?
I believe there is. This policy commences on the 1st of July.
Everyone's thoughts gratefully received. On that one, we're moving on. So I'm looking for a councillor, I believe, now to move the motion.
Yes, yeah. Can you clarify what was the it erroneously omitted piece?
So it's under the sustainable procurement considerations on page number 8. And the last line should be that up to 10% weighting can be applied for the sustainable considerations, which then goes on table number 9, page number 9, which has a table in it, and you'll find that this line is behind that table somewhere.
So, Ravin, can you just clarify that? So, taking councillors to page 8, you're reading the bottom line of page 8.
Line of page 8.
Yeah. Or so page 12 of 16 for others who are following in a different format.
Yep, page 12 of 16, which basically says under section number 20, sustainable procurement considerations, and the last line there should be up to 10% evaluation weighting can be applied to the sustainable considerations, right, on the bottom of that paragraph.
Can you say that a little bit slower? Can you say that again clearly and slowly? Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
But then you can take your mask off.
Mask off, yes. So page number 8, section number 20, sustainable procurement considerations. And at the bottom of that paragraph, which basically talks about City of Melbourne will use procurement to drive sustainable outcomes. There should be a line in there which says up to 10% valuation weighting can be applied for sustainable considerations.
So for the sake of accuracy and putting it beyond any doubt, could we amend the amendment in 10.3 so it reads something like approves amendments to the policy to include in section 20 sustainable procurement considerations?
Yeah.
The following, yep, that'll do, considering the words. Yeah, I think we could say that, but I think there's enough specificity in that clause to really make it very pretty clear. And then just after, say, comma, consistent with the existing policy, because I think that makes it very clear that there's no changes, Councillor Ball, to existing weightings around that particular policy objective.
I guess it just begs the question as to what, if it were ever to be less than 10%, what would happen? You know, can it be zero?
But we would never have zero consideration.
So if it was less than 10%, how much less? So I beg your pardon.
Well, I mean, it could be 1%, but it could be as low as 1%, but that would be very unlikely with our procurement policies.
why not just make it 10%?
Well, it gives you the flexibility in terms of the negotiations across the procurement policy in terms of how you then weight the other factors. And there might look, there may even be some purchases where it plays a much smaller role because of the type of service that's provided. It might not be goods, it might be a service.
It's a similar treatment for other aspects, is that right? It says up to?
Yeah.
So it's similar to the other.
So it's consistent. Lord Mayor, maybe
Lord Mayor, an example. If we were buying a contract for youth services, there is unlikely to be a significant sustainability weighting if we were purchasing equipment, if we were purchasing a contracted services, it would come into play. So it's being able to use it and apply it to its full extent where there is a sustainability outcome. Where it's not, and it's a straight procurement, it's likely to have a lesser weighting. So the acquisition of youth services is a good example.
So why limit it to 10% then?
Pardon?
Sorry. Why cap it at 10%? If it's variable depending on the contract, there may be contracts where sustainability is far more important than 10%.
So within our selection or criteria, we typically assign 40 to 60% on cost because the primary purpose of procurement is to actually show value for money. So typically it's 40 to 60%, but it can be as low as 20%. I've done contracts which are less than 20%. But also then the critical there is that you're also testing market capacity and capability. So you're actually looking for the capacity of the market to deliver the service accordingly, the capability of the market to deliver to your standards. You're also then looking for past performance. You're looking at plan for services. You're looking at references. So all those elements come into your 100% weighting. So it's of critical importance that we achieve the fact that, you know, we're driving capacity, where we're testing for that market capability and capacity to deliver according to your service levels. So as we start allocating that, you're allocating, you know, typically 40 to 60% on cost. You're then allocating another 40% on market capability capacity, and then you're then allocating perhaps 10% to sustainability, another 10% now for local economic benefits. So that element then really tightens up in terms of how we do that. Now, what this gives us the flexibility to do is to be able to scale up and down depending on the type of procurement you do. So if it's software and there's only two potential providers, perhaps you might not put sustainable outcomes there as strongly. But other elements, you know, we will focus on it where it's required.
Can I just add, Councillor Ball, one of the issues with procurement, and I think the review will be important, so the review at the end of 12 months because you can revisit it, what we don't want is to make sure, and part of this testing is to make sure there's no unintended consequences. So with procurement and in terms of the weighting and that balanced approach, so things like, you know, service and support, whole of life cost, ensuring the product's fit for purpose, if it's weighted too much in some instances, we might therefore buy on sustainability, but it might be, you know, it might not actually meet the target on some of those others. So it's a balanced approach, and I think what's being proposed here is review it after 12 months. There's a local content amount number in there also, and let's look at here are the contracts that have been awarded. So we will ensure that review of the procurement policy will also take into account what have we procured and how have those weightings been applied, and giving as much clarity over the procurement and policy and how it's been applied to give effect to the sustainability criteria.
So the argument for not putting a minimum threshold is the need for flexibility in different kinds of contracts that can be enormously different one from another, but why then have a maximum threshold? If you want flexibility, why not uncap that proportion, given that, I mean, in this definition of sustainability, economic sustainability is within the definition. Mm-hmm. So that should be one of three considerations, and it's crowding out social and environmental in that definition given.
And I think
if we're trying to meet our targets for emissions reductions, and we've just set a hard target in our plan for emissions reductions, and there's a contract coming up for renegotiation, which would be critical in reaching that target, then sustainability, given the need for flexibility, may be critical to increase the portion taken by sustainability in that particular contract.
Yeah, look, last comment, Lord Mayor, and then to Michael, which is that this is 10% is not insignificant by way of a contract. I'll make the first comment. And the second comment is the default position on these contracts is it is 10% and it's less. So the majority of our contracts are at that weighting, and I think it's where it's less. When it's less, it's the argument that, you know, it's not a factor. There is something else that's a factor because sustainability isn't a driver of it. The youth services contract is an example. But, Michael, have you got...
Yeah, look, I think we need to separate the 10% in terms of the weighting criteria from the consideration in terms of driving sustainable outcomes. 10% would not necessarily be... It's actually quite material in terms of a negotiation, 10% weighting on a contract. So you can negotiate some extremely strong sustainable outcomes with that 10% weighting in place. Obviously, if you lower it down to 5%, there may be other considerations that come into play that are just as important. But it doesn't undermine the importance of driving sustainable outcomes in the procurement process.
And we've also called out under the sustainable framework, we've actually included in the previous policy local economic benefits. We've now called that out as a separate item and given it 10%. So in effect, we've now given sustainable procurement considerations up to 20% now, including 10% into local buy.
Yeah, well, it's a beginning from a point of a rather strange interpretation of what sustainability is. Mm. So I'm all for local economic benefits, but it's not part of sustainability, triple bottom line accounting wouldn't have economic considerations as part of sustainability.
Can I recommend just for tonight, because we've already had a lot of chat on this, and we do have a review in 12 months' time again, that we... if we've got a motion that can be considered tonight, that we actually look at that motion now. I think some of the points Michael made earlier in terms of providing some practical examples as we go into that review will be helpful as well to see, so we can all understand the impacts. But we do have a motion before us tonight. I think it's important, if that's okay, that we go forward and consider that motion. And if you wanted to put an alternative, then as in a... urgent or something
simply
like that.
Thank you. This motion wasn't circulated prior to now, and I think it's a retrograde step because it's capping the consideration rather than it was uncapped before. When I raised
it wasn't. It wasn't uncapped before.
Well, it was an error, but the
yeah, but I don't think we're here
that
to.
We had in front of us.
Yeah, but the purpose of this wasn't to make the most of an error, which was a line slipping off the bottom of a policy, though. It was really to clarify what the policy was.
I wasn't aware that was the reason that wasn't in the policy, but...
The reason why we're making the changes to the motion is to reflect the fact that unwittingly, unknowingly, that had... Yeah, and it's really reflecting the policy as it was. But we do have a 12-month review, and I think that some of this substantive discussion can happen as part of that, if that's okay. So I think we've got a motion now that reflects what we were trying to achieve in both adopting the policy but also recognising, and thanks to Councillor Ball for identifying that in Councillor Only today, that actually there was a line missing, and so we're replacing that line with as it would have been if it hadn't inadvertently slipped off the page. So I'm looking at this motion as it appears on the screen. No. Thank you, though. So we've got a motion that we can put, and so Councillor Leloup is moving that motion. I'm looking for seconder to the motion. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you. Over to you, Councillor Lalu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And I was actually saying this is actually one of our most important one, and that's why I mentioned it in our budget, because procurement policy is actually quite crucial. I note your points has just been kind of already been discussed, Councillor Ball. I think with the point of that's why 10.21, I think we will be reviewing and looking at this in the 12 months. And I think whether the policy side of things between all 11 of us councillors, I note that we have actually gone through this many times and coming both in councillor forum and also individually as well. Both Ravine and Dennis, you guys have gone through this, and it was a great pickup by Councillor Ball, but I think there's no malice or no harsh intention on that. It was just literally just fell off, and I think, and we're just retrospecting and dealing, fixing it. So on that part, I want to move that. I really want to put in. It's kind of taking the whole thing out, but I really did actually wanted to put a big emphasis on the local economy benefit or the local buy, mainly because that we're putting in there and calling it out at a major 10%. And the reason why I highlighted during the budget, during the budget process, the budget motion previously, was that we have a $790 million budget. We're going to be spending a lot of money, and the people that we are looking to acquire our service and material, we want to give our local small businesses and businesses and traders and people the first and absolute opportunity. And that's why we have lifted the local economical benefit up as a 10% to ensure that we give the absolute maximum effort to those who are still within the city to continue to be here. If you look at a lot of business have moved out of the city. Australia Post, moved to outside the city, and countless other businesses have moved out. And, we really need to stem the flow of that thinking that, okay, well, it's too expensive to do business in the city, or it's doing, or we're not going to do anything. With this 10%, it creates an incentive for business to stay, for those who are actually thinking outside, but also, again, encourages those who are both, whether or not be outside of City of Melbourne, who is thinking of, it's no better time to come into the city, given the vacancies at the moment. After the lockdown, it's going to get really, as the Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor said, the buzz is really going to happen, and you want to be here when it happens. And to do that, create an office or create your business here, I think it's going to be very, very vitally important. I also note that helping our local business is what City of Melbourne should be doing first and foremost. They have a lot of business who stayed with us for many, many years, and they're looking to us to help. And this is a really good way for us to help those businesses who are struggling to be part of the the redevelopment phase of building Melbourne. And so that 10% is going to be really crucial. So that local economy benefit, I really hope that that word will be spread to everyone, so that all the business who are looking to get some really good outcomes at City of Melbourne, we welcome your business, and also we're also looking to partner with you.
Thank you, Councillor Lalu. DLM?
Thanks, Lord Mayor. City of Melbourne is introducing this new procurement policy under the Local Government Act requirements. It will see this new policy going live as of the 1st of July 2021, and we believe that we are possibly the first council to do this in Victoria, so at least one of the first, and so we hope this policy might become something that others may follow our lead on. As the new Act does state, the procurement principles and policy can be set by council and can reflect the capabilities and strategic priorities of the council, and that's certainly what this policy does do. as has been discussed at length, so I won't add much to this debate again, sustainability, both social and environmental, will become an important part of this policy. In fact, if anything, the weighting given to those now at 10%, up to 10%, is more focused than it was under the previous policy, where the term sustainability could actually include social sustainability, environmental sustainability, and economic sustainability. So the fact that we've now got social and environmental can now carry 10% effectively puts more of a spotlight on that. Importantly, that is complex, but it is the case. Importantly, another significant change has occurred, and that is the 10% weighting given to the local buy or local economic benefits to try and activate the city and bring businesses back in. As we've heard from Councillor Leilu, the City of Melbourne as an entity or organisation is a very significant actor in the City of Melbourne economy with a $790 million budget. And so this procurement policy very much tries to leverage our ability as a major consumer to drive economic and job activity in Melbourne. And to this effect, we're allocating up to 10% within our evaluation criteria on all procurements around that local buy or local economic benefits criteria. A second and very important factor here is that the policy enables council to make local buy mandatory in cases where there is sufficient market competition within the City of Melbourne municipality and the council can show value for money. That means in the right circumstances, in certain circumstances, the City of Melbourne can effectively give 100% weighting to businesses within the city. Again, another important driver of local economic activity. Now, as it stands, around 30% of the City of Melbourne's spend is within our boundary. But I believe that with this new policy, this new procurement policy, we'll be able to push that well over 40%. And I know that Ravin and Michael will be very aligned with council on that particular aspiration. So, around 40% of all our procurement occurring within the boundary, that's just not a percentage, that's not just a number, that ultimately means jobs here in the City of Melbourne, and that's going to be a critical part of our city economy bouncing back. Finally, I do note there will be a 12-month review of this new policy under the amended motion that's before us this evening, and so that will give us councillors an opportunity again to have a look at how this policy is travelling and if necessary make some further tweaks. And I'm going to conclude by thanking Michael Tanache and in particular Ravin Balendran, who has worked with us over the last couple of months to get this policy into shape. So thank you both for that. And I really do urge all councillors to vote for this and get behind this procurement policy.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Are there other speakers to the motion? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I note that we are interpreting this policy as there will be a 12-month plan presented to council. We're not making that amendment, and it's not open to officers to make further amendments after the decision's made here. That's the advice of Mr. Wood. And so I think the only way to interpret that part in Section 7 is to receive a report to council. Now, I don't think that was the intention. I'm just saying that if councillors wish to reflect the will of those recommending to us that not necessarily go to council. There is an alternative motion I've circulated which also has that amendment, but I'm completely not fussed. That's not the biggest issue before us tonight. I just think that the correct way to interpret the policy, if it's adopted tonight, is that these 12-month plans will be presented to the council, not to council laws. The issue of how to assess a tender is only one small part of this new procurement policy.
And I think the new procurement policy overall is quite good. We've undergone a lot of change in the last few years with the centralisation of our procurement function and with the back and forth between work areas and our centralised procurement team as to how to drive the best financial outcomes for the city while also meeting all of our other policy objectives, whether it's on all definitions of sustainability or local employment or what have you. On the issue of waiting, I just want to make the point that that's how you assess a tender, but that's once the tenderer has responded to all of the requirements that you've set for them. So in my experience, we have always set in our tenders requirements to meet certain of council's policies. So if it's a services contract, there's always going to be some mandatory compliance measures in there that if they're not met, well, you're not even going to be able to complete the application. And above and beyond that, there's just going to be some basic requirements in the tender that they're going to have to respond to, which will generally include a plan for services that will have some basic sustainability measures in them. The sustainability weighting, to my mind, is how the applicants differentiate themselves from each other and provide that innovation above and beyond the requirements that we give them. But let me be clear, if we haven't already done the best we can with all of our work areas to say exactly what innovations we're trying to drive, exactly what policy objectives on the sustainability front we're trying to get out of all of these different procurement and tender processes, then we haven't done our job. I've not seen too many. I've seen a few. I've not seen too many tenders go out that are just saying, "Here's the service" or "Here's the goods that we want. Come back to us," and then we just hope that the one with the lowest cost also has some good sustainability measures on the side. That 10% weighting is far from the only way that we measure the value of the contract that we're procuring for. And so we, as a high-performing and innovative council, have to make sure that those tenders are written in a way that meet a whole lot of our policy objectives, and so those scoring issues are just, those weighting issues are a final last-ditch effort just to make sure that we're differentiating those who apply. So 5%, 10%, 50%, 1%, hopefully it's always irrelevant. That's my hope, that's my aim, and the best thing about this is that we are going to have a 12-month review, but I think we're going to review this on an annual basis anyway. Certainly under the 1989 Act, we had to review it on an annual basis. I'm not sure if that's still the case. Under the 2020 Act, I know we've got to do it within 6 months and then review it at least once. Don't know if it's 12 months, but we're going to do it. Someone's holding up some fingers. I can't quite see that far. I'm a little bit short-sighted, but we are going to do a review one way or another, whether it's a statutory obligation or we've just voluntarily decided to do it. We're going to do one, and let's have this conversation all over again. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Now, look, just a point of order so that we all have complete information. It turns out that under the Act, the item could be deferred. And in fairness, I think that, you know, we need to acknowledge that it could be deferred. Michael still doesn't believe that's true. Ravin doesn't.
Lord Mayor, if we just get Keith
but
to
Keith
read.
Keith does.
There's a part to the Act with Keith.
But we've,
just,
yeah, we're supposed to do it within 6 months, so we've already breached that.
Just if we get this section of the Act read, Keith.
Well, if you refer to the report, actually says that paragraph 5 of the procurement section takes effect on the 1st of July with a 6-month implementation window. That's what the report says. As the DLM acknowledged, we are probably the first to go with this.
No, but what it means is you've got six months
to
adjust all of your systems and processes and where you do tenders, et cetera, to actually implement the policy. That's what the implementation time is about. But do we have to have the motion done by the 1st of July?
You've already got a policy that will continue. This policy, as Councillor Leppett points out, changes a lot of things and significantly increases the threshold. financial threshold?
This, look, I think this policy also aligns to the new Act, so there are benefits for the organisation in the...
I don't think that's the point. I think that we're arguing the policy. The policy is the policy put forward by management. The point is the question was asked,
yes,
and we provided an answer which we don't think is accurate. So being clear about what the answer is important,
yep,
which is hence the Lord Mayor's point of order.
Yep, we've had lots of discussion and debate, and the motion is before us. I'm proposing that we keep going on this basis, given that we've got a review in 12 months anyway, but I want to make sure everybody feels comfortable that we've got the information and we're going ahead, or the majority. It seems that that is the way. Councillor Ball?
I'm not clear what the answer to the question is. We have to have a policy by the 1st of July, so we cannot defer this. Is that the answer?
That was not my answer, Councillor Ball. My answer is what the report says, which is the 1st of July, you've then got 6 months to implement the policies.
So if we don't adopt it tonight, it can't take effect from the 1st of July?
Correct.
We've just been looking at the Local Government Act information, and it has to be adopted within 6 months and breach the legislation. Okay. It has to be adopted within 6 months of a commencement of the section, which we believe is 31st of December. What you could do, of course, is adopt it tonight and request a review of it before the 12 months. It has to be reviewed at least once every 12 months. So you could adopt it tonight and then amend it later.
The way that it's drafted, now that we understand implementation period, is that it will be reviewed potentially 18 months after it's adopted, because there's 6 months for the implementation period.
You can review it any time you like. It's just it must be reviewed at least once.
Will take place within 12 months.
Lord Mayor, you're technically correct. Just in terms of what's just been read, the review of the procurement policy will take place 12 months after the implementation period. The implementation period is up to 6 months, up to. Now, the implementation period up to. So it could be as soon as 12 months because we're implementing. And I think, therefore, for all wants and purposes, we're reporting back in 12 months the review of the procurement policy.
That's not what it says.
And is 3 or 6 months for implementation correct?
Up to 6 months, but we've said in the report 3.
Microphone, please.
It's up to, correct me if I'm on CEO, but it's up to 6 months, but the report we're reporting to for its recommendation is 3 months.
We're still clear. It says up to 6 months. We are implementing. We are adopting the procurement policy tonight and we're implementing immediately. For all wants and purposes, we are reporting back to council in 12 months' time in terms of a review of the procurement policy. It says after...
You need to take the after implementation period off.
Yeah, I think that would be clear, most clear.
That would be better. So if we could take that out, we're going to need to move the motion now that it appears on the screen. If we're happy to do that and we're not doing a deferral. Can I just quickly put to councillors, are we happy to consider this matter this evening given the discussion that we've already had? If I can have a nodding of heads. Yep, so the majority are still nodding in favour of moving this motion tonight. We've got a review within 12 months and I think next time we're going to make sure that we've covered off on all of the items that have been identified this evening. I think that'll be worthwhile, of course. And so I'm looking for a mover to the motion as it now appears on the screen. That's Councillor Lalu. I'm looking for a seconder to the motion. That's you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Would you like to say anything about...
Sorry, Lord Mayor. The mover has moved, the seconder has seconded. We've just tweaked it with the consent of the mover and seconder. We're most of the way through the debate.
I'm just double-checking. Yeah, okay. And so I'm making sure we've covered all our I's and T's. Councillor Liu, did you want to add anything to the comments you've already made? No? Deputy Lord Mayor, did you want to add anything? Is there anybody else that would like to speak to this motion
No? Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare the motion carried. Thanks, everybody, for a very interesting discussion and finding a way forward. And there will be much interest in our procurement policy, particularly over the next 12 months. We can now say that we are concluding reports. We can now say we're concluding reports from management to be considered in open session this evening. There are no items of general business for consideration in this open session. But, councillors, does anybody have urgent business they'd like to discuss? No? Then thank you. That means I can call on a councillor to move the motion that is displayed on the screen that will close this meeting to the public so that we can consider confidential business. Can I have a mover of that motion, please? Councillor Griffiths, thanks, and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Doidge, thank you. Putting the motion to the vote, all those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thanks to all our management team. Thanks to the members of the public who have joined us throughout the day today. We're declaring the open meeting closed at 7:50 p.m. Thanks, everyone.